Hey everybody, it's G, and I just wanted to welcome y'all back after the super long hiatus. Matt and I have been very busy since the last episode. I bought and sold a house, and life just kept throwing stuff at us. But we're back with episode 5, which is a continuation of the soundtrack throwback. I hope you all enjoyed part 1, and I'm sure you've all been waiting patiently for part 2, so let's get right into it.
Welcome to the show. The Omnium Gatherum Music Podcast is designed to be an open conversation of all things musical. Each episode, your hosts put together a playlist of randomly selected songs to discuss, for you to listen to and enjoy in your own time.
Join Matt and I as we review, reminisce, and randomly run our mouths about whatever we want. And we want to hear from you too. We'll have segments that include special guests and listener participation so the conversation never goes stale.
Follow us on social media or pop by the website to learn how to be a part of the show.
And now, let's get it on.
Music.
Next song.
That wasn't the one.
No, you want to do which one did you want to do? This one?
Yeah.
Bow.
There we go. And we're back.
I always said if I had a superpower, it would be to like just to be able to like command a fucking like James Brown funk hit.
Oh yeah.
With my hands.
Where you could be like, hey, blow me some train.
Right. I've never heard that in my life, but I'm going to use that. I love it. You can just like point emphatically and get your like.
Yes.
Just a horn hit like. Ba-dow!
Bam!
Bam! Bam! Bam!
Two times.
Bam! Bam!
Thank you.
Yeah.
I said break it down.
I said break it down.
Thank you. So.
That would be a cool superhero, though. A superpower.
Yeah.
What's next on the list? You got the list pulled up.
Okay, so I am.
Oh, yes.
Not the world's biggest Stephen King nerd, but I love.
You're pretty short, actually. Sorry, that was a dad joke. I'm sorry. I saw the look on your face.
I was like, wait. I was trying to process that.
Yeah,
like,
I saw the wheels turning. That was great. We're actually in the same room for the first time on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Came down to Indianapolis, or up to Indianapolis from where I'm at, actually. And, yeah, we're doing this in the same room for the first time, so it's great to be able to see your reactions and play off of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're not the world's largest Stephen King fan.
Or smallest. But I am a big Stephen King fan. I've read every novel that he's released.
Yeah?
Yeah. And short story collection. And
that's impressive. Because it's not all great.
No.
And I'm sure you'll be the first to admit.
No.
Not everything Stephen King has written is fucking gold.
No, but.
He himself said he doesn't even remember Cujo.
Oh, yeah.
He's so coked out.
I don't think he remembers Gerald's Game at all, yeah. Which is probably his worst. Or
that's unfortunate because that's my name.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Mm-hmm. So this is really interesting. Like, if you watch the movie Gerald's Game on Netflix.
The newer one?
Yeah, it's a Netflix original.
Mm-hmm. I did watch it.
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's weird. It's one of those rare cases where the movie's
better than the book?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Like, what?
It's probably because when he was writing it, he just didn't give a shit.
He just put a lot of extra weird nonsense that didn't tie into anything.
And they cut all that shit out for the movie?
Yeah, they had to make it a lot more concise. So in this case, it worked to cut out the excess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about Stephen King. What's the movie and the song?
The movie in question for the soundtrack is Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive!
The only film that Stephen King directed.
He directed it himself.
He actually directed this film.
He sat in that chair.
Wrote it, directed. It's not great. You know.
It's not terrible either. Was it 1986?
Yeah. And
so we were 3 years old when that came out.
I've only ever seen it on TV.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Emilio.
That's Emilio, the Mighty Ducker himself.
That's right. AC/DC did the entire soundtrack, which is just, it's kind of.
And didn't you say that was Stephen King's favorite band? Is that or one
they,
of his?
They would definitely be up there, I'm sure, for him because he likes rock. He references the Ramones quite a bit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so he that era, like 70s, late 70s, early 80s stuff would be right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah. I wonder if he was into the New York Dolls at all.
Yeah, I could see that.
But AC/DC is that's the entire soundtrack.
The whole movie thing.
It's all AC/DC.
Yeah.
All right. That's a bold choice.
Yeah. And it's not like they, well, so I don't know. It's sort of a compilation in a way because most of the songs AC/DC had already recorded and released.
Right.
But they,
on other albums.
Yeah.
And then they put down, it was like a compilation album for the soundtrack.
But with
a couple of new songs.
Couple of originals. Yeah. Yeah.
So what song did you pick for the, for that one?
Shake Your Foundations.
It
seemed like it was the song that was playing when the most
most iconic scene
truck like carnage was happening.
Yeah, they were like, the trucks were destroying the gas station.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, you just have to see it, like
it's so cheesy.
Yeah. Just watch like the last half an hour of the movie, maybe.
That's the best part.
Yeah. You probably don't even need to see the setup.
Skip the rest.
Yeah.
Or watch a trailer on YouTube.
Yeah. Honestly, just watch clips and you'll get the gist of what's
Maximum Overdrive. Basically, cars come to life.
Yeah. All machines.
Machines, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, we created you, but now you've turned on us.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Who made who?
Yeah. What hath God wrought?
What hath I done?
God being me in the scene. On to one of, I know, my personal favorites, and I'm sure yours as well, The Big Lebowski.
I fucking love this movie. It's one of my top five favorite movies of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen it so many times. And I can almost quote the entire thing.
I know. I definitely reference this movie more than anything else.
Yeah, in like everyday life. It just happens. Like, yeah. You can relate everything back to The Big Lebowski, back to the dude.
Mm-hmm. I won't even know that I'm about to do it. It's so ingrained. It just happens.
It's such a classic hero journey tale, and just like this lovable, like, main character who's just a lovable fuck up.
But it also kind of turns the hero journey on its head. It's upside down in a way because he knows essentially what's going to happen the entire time.
Yeah, well, he was right the whole time and nobody believes him.
And he doesn't really care.
Yeah, he's just kind of bumbling along. Just white Russian to the next.
All right, I just wanted to get my rug.
Yeah, all the dude ever wanted was his fucking rug back, man. It really tied the room together.
Exactly.
It's a hell of a Caucasian, Gary.
Every time someone pees on a rug, I have to...
Every time a rug is micturated upon in this fair city?
We could go on and on.
Yeah, I'm not going to quote the entire movie, but it's definitely one of my favorites. And the track is...
Just Dropped In.
To See What Condition My Condition Is In.
Kenny Rogers in the First Edition.
Yeah.
So, I remembered this particular moment in the film when he's having...
The dream sequence?
He gets knocked out.
Yeah.
And then
he gets punched.
Yeah.
By the rug peer.
Mm-hmm. And then he's having a, I don't know, like a hallucination of sorts.
Yeah. It's like a dream. It's a dream sequence, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he was unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so trippy. It's like... You don't know at first, like, what is happening?
Right. And the song is very trippy itself.
Mm-hmm.
The very beginning of the song is like, wah, wah, wah,
wah, wah, wah. It's very psychedelic, but groovy.
Yep.
At the same time, it's almost like,
it's not what you would expect from Kenny Rogers.
Yeah.
But it was before Kenny Rogers was known as Kenny Rogers.
Mm. It's before Kenny Rogers Roasters.
Yeah, definitely before the chicken. I think this song might be the best thing that Kenny Rogers ever did.
What about...
Nope.
Islands in the Stream?
Nope. The Gambler? Nope. This is it.
You got to know when to hold them?
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
In this case, I should fold them? Short.
You should fold them.
Okay, I fold.
Know when to walk away. Know when to run.
Oh, I'm... By the look on your face, I might need to run.
Oh, shit. Do you remember the... What was the... Who did the cover of that? Wyclef?
That's,
you got to know when to hold up.
Yeah, he did that.
Know when to fold
up. I think that's... Oh, man.
Know when to walk away.
Yeah, somebody fact check that.
Know when to run.
We're not bothering to look
into it. You got to count.
Did Wyclef do that song?
Before you touch the turntable. When you run out of big tunes. I mean, your sound is done. Yeah.
It's done.
It's done.
But you know what's not done?
This list?
Yeah. Next.
What's next?
Is a real hero. This is like, we're getting much more, well, not too much more modern here, but.
Well, it's a modern movie with a very retro sounding soundtrack.
Yeah. I remember when this came out, the movie Drive, starring Gosling.
Ryan Gosling. That one Gosling.
You know, the guy who always.
Some baby goose.
He has the photos with. Where he's looking.
It's like, hey, girl. All those memes that start with, hey, girl.
Yeah. He's just looking like a...
Just being all sultry and like shit.
Guy.
It's not fair how handsome he is. Yeah. Son of a bitch.
And it's odd, you know, because... What is it?
What? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You look at him and you're like... For a second, you're like... Is it...
Is this guy really attractive?
Or is he not? He is.
Or is he incredibly normal?
Yeah. But he just has some aura.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But the whole soundtrack to this movie, it was very like retro wave is what I would call it. So it was like, it sounds like you're in the 1980s.
But the movie's today. 2000s.
Yeah. So it was new wave when it was new. And now that it's retro.
But it wasn't. It was new when it was late, when it was old.
Yep. Start from the beginning. Perhaps we better start from the beginning.
The track is called A Real Hero. I just know that it's just a fun synth heavy kind of groove.
It's, you know? It's a great driving song, funny enough. Like all that kind of music. When I'm on a road trip, that's one of the first things I go to. It's just like that retro wave station. It's bands like Gunship and FM84 and The Midnight. And I love it.
Trevor something.
Trevor something. What's that guy's name? Is Trevor something? Trevor. Yeah, Trevor something.
Yeah, Trevor something. Look him up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the 80s nostalgia that's happening right now.
It just feels right. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
And it again, like, I just think it's interesting how people who weren't even around to experience it the first time
still connect with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder what it is that is resonating about that.
Yeah. What's so relatable about those tones and those sounds and that like whole milieu?
I think it's the fact that it actually had melody driving the tunes.
Yeah.
And since the early 90s, a vast majority of music hasn't been very melody driven.
Hasn't been very melodic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's been mostly rhythmic driven.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about that in one of the previous episodes. I think it's like a technology thing because the way music was made changed.
Big time. It became much more digital.
Right.
Which is, you know.
And usually started with a beat.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
It's not inherently bad or good. It's just
different.
A different evolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's certainly been some great aspects of it because people have now been able to harness that and add in melody. So you get kind of the best of both worlds.
Yeah. You get this like incredibly complex, both melodically complex and rhythmically complex music.
And so it'll sort of sound like a throwback, but also incorporate new technology and sound so much more high definition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. What do we got next?
Goodbye Horses.
Goodbye Horses.
Silence of the Lambs. That film is disgusting.
And awesome. I mean, Anthony Hopkins was amazing.
One of his greatest performances.
The scene in the movie is just unforgettable. Q Lazarus, Goodbye Horses.
Goodbye Horses with Wild
Buffalo Bill. I don't remember that actor's name, but he still scares the shit out of me. Like everything he's in.
That is the most terrifying. He's got
that deep ass voice. Mm-hmm. Something about his voice, I think, is just like terrifying.
Right. He
put the lotion in the basket.
Yeah. It is one of those. Again, it's such a believable character because it seems too specific. You know, like somebody had to have done some research and like known, okay, these are the really weird characteristics or behaviors that somebody
they just kind of like compiled them all, like took all the weirdest shit and put them together, and that's Buffalo Bill.
He's an amalgamation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was their, the whole shtick was like profiling, right? Mm-hmm.
He's a boogeyman.
Yeah, he's like the classic boogeyman. Mm-hmm. I see.
But him dancing to this like really
tucked it. Yeah, and he was like, "Would you fuck me?"
I'd fuck me. It's a pretty song, and it's on actually for our list. It's one of the kind of lightest, airiest kind of.
Yeah,
just
it is a pretty song, but it's not. You can tell that the like lyrically and content wise, it's not very happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a sad song.
Yeah, and that happens so often, like so much more than I ever realized before. Where a lot of times lyrics and the sound,
especially in the 80s,
don't match up.
And I feel like Mad World is another one of those songs,
because
like, you know, the Gary Jewell version was slowed down and made to be like it fit the film very well, but like the original Tears for Fears song is a lot faster and sounds more happy,
upbeat.
Yeah, but he's like, you know, the dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had.
Worn out places.
Fuck. It's depressing as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like a lot of that came out of the 80s too. That juxtaposition of the incongruous, the happy sounding sad songs.
That's an OGM favorite. Terminology there.
Yeah, and that came from a professor of ours we had in college, because we both took some film classes together, and I forgot, was it Gehring? Wes Gehring.
Mm-hmm.
Said that for him, the definition of comedy was the juxtaposition of the incongruous, and he was obsessed with like Charlie Chaplin. That was his thing, was
and also screwball comedy,
right?
So he referenced like Bringing Up Baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the classic Katharine Hepburn movies.
Yeah. That was good times.
Mm-hmm.
Ball State University. Wes Gehring. Give it up.
Yes, sir.
What do we got next?
One of, I think, just the all-time, like, how would you describe this band? So iconic, so...
The Cure?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The Cure is legendary.
Yeah.
You know, they're one of a kind.
They almost started the goth movement. At least, like, popularly.
Yeah, they were able to, make pop or make goth. Even though I don't think they themselves...
No, they didn't really identify as any of that stuff.
Goth.
No.
Yeah. They were, I think, in a lot of ways, kind of like what Nine Inch Nails was to industrial. Is sort of like what The Cure is to goth.
Yeah, I like that analogy.
They really are their own thing, adjacent to this other
Yeah, they exist outside of it, but still influence it from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Robert Smith, you're so weird.
And
you're such a weird band.
His just himself, you know, didn't give a shit about fitting in to whatever
box. And thank God.
Yeah.
Right? Because otherwise, what would we have gotten out of them? Not much.
The just covers of 70s punk songs.
I remember when I first learned about The Cure, it was obviously well into their career. And I like to, a lot of times when I discover a new band, I'll go back to their beginning and listen from like the beginning of their catalog. And there's a huge shift somewhere along the line.
For sure.
Of the beginning of The Cure to like late 80s Cure. A
couple,
and like,
three albums maybe.
Yeah. There's a huge shift in there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of my favorite songs of theirs off the Crow soundtrack, which is in itself an excellent soundtrack. It's
the whole thing.
You know, it's got Stone Temple Pilots and
Pantera
and so many. And I think that Stone Temple Pilots song is only in the movie for like 5 seconds. It's like playing in a fucking car as it drives by, like the opening shot of a scene. I'm like, all right, cool.
It just, when music is sort of within the actual action of the film.
When it's happening within the scene,
that can be, lend it more kind of realism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this song, I feel like, really fit the mood of the whole movie. Was just so tortured.
Mm.
And the song, I think, it has an element of like of torture to it.
It's called Burn.
Yes. Every night I burn.
Yeah.
Every night I scream your name.
Every night. It's, oh man, yeah, that is such a good way to sum up the feeling of The Crow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, someone who dies before their time unjustly and gets to come back to set things right. That was just like the ultimate like vengeance film back in the day in the 90s. And then, excellent performance from Brandon Lee, who was
killed on set.
Was killed on set during the movie. It was Bruce. That was Bruce Lee's son, right?
Yeah.
Hadn't really done much before then.
Some porno, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
He was he was in some pornography.
Okay. Well, good for you, Brandon.
Yeah.
But it was a very strange accident. And I remember people were really shocked by it. Like he definitely died before his time.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he probably could have gone on to do much greater things.
Because he was.
They didn't even finish the movie with him.
In his 20s, right?
Late
20s, maybe?
I don't remember how old he was. I know he was very young. And people were really shocked. And they actually had to like figure out a way to cut the movie together and finish the scenes without him because of a bullet. It was supposed to be a blank. Or maybe it was a blank and then like there was accidentally some kind of projectile that.
Yeah, he was only 28.
28. Damn, that's 10 years younger than I am now.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Getting taken out at 28. Making a movie like The Crow.
And then his father lived longer than that, but not a lot, I don't believe.
When did Bruce Lee die?
His father was 33 when he passed away.
Uh-huh.
I believe. Yeah.
So sad.
Or 32 years old.
32?
Yeah.
Well, they both died pretty fucking young.
Yeah.
Neither of them hit to 35. That's sad. Moving right along.
David Bowie.
David Bowie.
As the British like to say.
Do they?
I think some people refer to him as Bowie.
Oh, man. That would really throw me off.
I don't know if it's like they do it as kind of a joke. It's sort of cheeky.
That kind of angers me, actually. His name's fucking David Bowie.
Bowie. Bowie. Bowie.
Bowie.
Is it Bowie? Bowie? Because, like, think about Daniel Bowie, spelled the same, B but we pronounce it completely differently.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that David gets to decide how his name is pronounced.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know that I've ever heard him pronounce his own name. I'm Bowie. Bowie's in space.
Bowie in space.
Oh man!
But this is one off of the shit. What did I just lost it.
The movie. So the song is China Girl, and it's
right.
Wedding
Singer. The Wedding Singer. Yeah. this is one of my picks. Why did I just brain fart on this? But just classic, iconic 80s soundtrack
mm-hmm.
about, you know, the movie's about a wedding singer in the 80s. So it's just chock full of 80s hits.
Yeah.
And I remember the scene when they're in the club and, you know, she's like singing along to him. She's like, just you shut your mouth and like puts her finger yes. on his nose. That's such a cute Drew Barrymore moment.
Drew Barrymore, yeah.
But it's also like the scene that you figure out that her fiance is a fucking douchebag.
Goulia.
Like, you're going to be Julia Goulia?
Damn it. And he drives a DeLorean.
He's like checking out the other waitress and mm-hmm. like, that is some grade A prime
beef or something like that. Don't ever refer to somebody as that.
People are not beef, you dick.
God damn.
But yeah, that was that's where that one came from. And there's just like, obviously that was really hard to pick a song from the Wedding Singer soundtrack, yeah. but it is one of my favorite soundtracks. It was like a double album, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would have gone with Ladies Night.
The John Lovitz version.
Because of John Lovitz.
He's losing his mind, and I'm reaping all the benefits.
Sophisticated mama.
Sophisticated mama. John Lovitz is great.
Acting.
Yeah.
That man. And okay.
That movie was great, too.
But, okay, so looking back, where would you rank Wedding Singer in Adam Sandler's filmography? Because, okay, the reason I ask is when I was younger, I thought, you've got Billy Madison.
Okay.
And you've got Happy Gilmore.
Mm-hmm. And there was another movie before Billy Madison called Overboard, Going Overboard, right?
That doesn't count.
Okay.
That is complete garbage.
Okay. That's not, okay. We're not including that.
That's like Pantera before
Pantera. Before Phil. Yeah. Okay. So this is Adam Sandler before Adam Sandler.
Right.
So we start at Happy Gilmore. Billy Madison.
Yeah.
And then Happy Gilmore.
Mm-hmm. But going back, rewatching Billy Madison, it's a little rough.
It is.
It's got some moments that I still reference.
Yes, of course.
But it's not a super solid film overall.
No, not at all. I do still love the song with the clown at the end. It's not just the clown, but it's like everyone singing along. Mm-hmm. We're here to help you, Billy.
Yes.
The clown though is like, hey, kids, it's me.
Remember me?
I bet you thought that I was dead.
And we did.
Yeah, we did.
We thought he died.
But when he fell over, he just broke his leg and got a hemorrhage in his head.
And now he's fine.
But after that was what came after
Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore,
and that is clearly like, you know, classic Sandler.
Mm-hmm.
Also
very quotable.
Mm-hmm. And I do think definitely a step up as far as production value.
Sure.
Cameos and just the overall kind of. How the film is cohesive, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. It's not just purely silly.
Right.
Yeah.
It's got also some kind of tender moments, not quite like to the point that Wedding Singer.
Sure. The Wedding Singer is like extreme in that.
Because
mm-hmm. it's a love story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think all of his movies had some kind of like element of that to it, but not as serious as this one was.
Mm-hmm. But he and Drew Barrymore like just worked.
Yeah.
It was almost like Hepburn and help me out.
Not to this is your reference, man. Yeah. I don't know what you're going for.
Well, I'm trying to do classic Hollywood and I'm failing.
Oh, okay. Like
Cary Grant. Yeah.
Hepburn and Grant.
Hepburn and Grant. You know.
Like beans and cornbread.
Right. Exactly. They go together like beans and rice. Like liver nuggets. They hang out like hotcakes and molasses.
Oh, Louis Jordan. What was that? That song was like the theme song for Dinner and a Movie.
Dinner and a Movie.
Oh, was that TBS?
TBS, yeah.
Yeah. Beans and cornbread had a fight. I remember hearing that song and being like, fuck yes, it's on. Mm-hmm. It's on. We're going to watch a movie.
All you have to hear is the first couple of notes on the saxophone. Mm-hmm. You know exactly what it is.
Yep. I didn't know that was an actual song for the longest time because, you know, that was a kid when that shit was coming out. And I was just like, oh, they just.
Well, and yeah, why would you get Louis Jordan?
Why would I know Louis Jordan as a fucking 13-year-old white boy?
Yeah, it was because he was a star in the 30s.
Yeah.
You know?
Way before 50 my time.
Years
before I was born.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it like now.
Bruce Lee and his dad, both their lifespans.
You mean Brandon Lee and his dad?
Bruce Lee and whoever. So, I don't know. I'm going to have to rewatch some of the Sandler and just maybe come up with a Sandler ranking.
A ranking of Sandler movies? Okay.
Should I even bother? I don't know.
I mean, is it going to help you sleep at night?
No.
Then don't.
Okay. Wedding Singer's good, though.
It's very good. I mean, Billy Idol.
Yes. His cameo.
Yeah.
Is like somewhat cringy, but somewhat.
It's amazing. Just, yeah, somewhat amazing.
It's amazing and like fun and just silly.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the next movie.
Much more serious film here. Changing tones completely. Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One best picture, I believe. Yeah. Early 70s.
And that was John Voight and
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman.
If you've never seen it, just be prepared for a very serious. Just
hold on to your butts.
Yeah. Like Oscar, like the type of movie that would have won an Oscar in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's going to be intense.
It's about a down and out male prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
New York City. Just
trying to make ends meet.
Hard times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to eat.
But this song, Everybody's Talking by Harry Nilsson, this is a cover, but his version is so much more well known.
Yeah. Just from the first few notes, it's recognizable.
Yeah. It's like as soon as it starts playing and he starts singing the first line, you will know this song.
Yeah.
If you've ever heard it before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's immediately recognizable.
Iconic. Then
covered a couple times, wasn't it?
Bill Withers did a version of it, which so
surprises me that it wasn't more, because I mean,
yeah,
Bill Withers is great and
but it didn't quite have the energy that I would have wanted it to have.
Yeah, the Harry Nilsson version has that energy.
It keeps moving, even though it's not like a super upbeat song or anything.
No,
but it has a
smoothness
and yeah, just so well written and you know, just cohesive. I think is kind of the. Something that's so hard to put your finger on, and what makes a song work and seem seamless.
Seamlessly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's beyond me. Obviously, I'm not a songwriter. So.
man, this next tune that we picked, one of... I think, just the all-time feel-good songs that, especially, like, if you have to drive late at night and you want something to just give you an extra boost to keep you going, put on Radar Love.
By Golden Earring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you will find your way home. It's that driving.
Yes, that fucking, that beat and the... I've been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel.
Get it.
It's so good. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Please hold your applause. When I get lonely. It's so fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so energetic.
The kind of the middle section, if you will, where the horns come in.
Yeah.
And they just keep going up and up, and it's more and more intense.
There's a crescendo there.
Yeah, you can't
build up,
and then like they build it up to this almost like fever pitch, and then it
and they bring it back down.
Just very.
I love it.
Yes, so iconic.
Yeah. The next one is speaking of iconic soundtracks.
This is another artist. Musician who I would say is legendary level, one of the greatest, like who, just peerless, somebody who
played every single instrument you can imagine.
Yeah. Composed just gobs of amazing content.
Mm-hmm.
And is one of those sort of once in a lifetime talents.
Yeah. And we miss him already. We're talking about Prince, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Such a treasure.
Milwaukee's done.
Such a tragedy to lose. But Purple Rain, one of the best soundtracks, one of the most iconic soundtracks ever made.
Mm-hmm. I think the soundtrack itself won an Oscar.
Grammy?
Was it Grammy? Well, because it was obviously associated with the film Purple Rain.
Right.
So I think it was probably nominated in both awards.
That's interesting.
But none of the individual songs won anything, but I think the soundtrack as a whole was award-winning. Not that that carries too much weight. But it just to kind of place it into perspective of how big a deal this thing was.
Right.
You know.
And still is.
Yeah.
You know, it's so recognizable. And I didn't choose the titular track on this one.
I Would Die For You. That song. Oh, man.
I love it. I don't know. Yeah. I mean,
I think the first impression I got of it was how interesting the syncopated rhythm is.
Yeah.
He sings it. At first, it almost feels like the song's sort of
stilted.
Yeah. But it,
I'm not your lover.
Yeah.
I'm not your friend.
But it works. Like
And there's little jabs here and there too. Mm-hmm. That like
had a knack for. He's like, okay, I could put down something that's just a straightforward kind of what you expect, and then I'm gonna tweak it just a little.
I'm gonna fuck with it.
Yeah. I'm gonna change just this little bit and see like if you even notice. Like your ear will notice before
your mind knows. You are
actually cognizant
of it. Before you realize it.
Mm-hmm.
Snuck up on you. Great track though. I mean, it's also got like a driving rhythm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like
it's funky.
It's still funky, and the vocal pattern is not like it is like it is very stilted. Like you were saying, it's almost like in between. He's like singing in between.
It's just a very unique rhythmic pattern.
Yeah.
It's perfect for the song itself. But I don't see very many people being able to pull that off as kind of effortlessly as he seemed to.
As Prince, yeah. He seemed to just do everything effortlessly from fucking playing guitar to like playing basketball.
Duncan.
Prince is mean on the court. So I've heard.
Oh, man. Chappelle Show.
Mm-hmm. Better not bring your kids.
Another one from the 80s that is such an interesting cultural phenomenon. Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing.
What can you say about that movie? Like, it just...
It wouldn't have been made today.
Yeah.
I think it would be problematic today. This like much older dance instructor has this relationship with a younger girl at camp. I don't think that would have flown today.
Yeah.
But it's such a classic like 80s romance, like every little girl's dream kind of like, you know?
Yeah.
It's that movie that like, I don't know. It was good. It was a good movie, and this song obviously is
somehow it works, even though it's so of its time. Like it, like you're right. It would not work.
It only worked in that particular time. Yeah, when people were just like, "Eh, okay, like,
oh, okay,
huh. He seems like a nice guy." How old is he? Okay, sure. But nobody puts baby in a corner.
And the actress Jennifer Grey, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. The fact that she, if you want to change your appearance, that's well and whatever you want to do, mm-hmm. You know.
To each their own.
Exactly. I have nothing bad to say on that, but just to become so famous. And then, like, just change it up. And then, I don't know.
Does she look totally different now?
Yeah, she...
Like Renee Zellweger different?
Yes. To where...
Like, who the fuck is that?
She's unrecognizable.
Yeah. Maybe that was on purpose, though. Maybe she was just, like, so tired of being, like...
Recognized as...
Yeah, typecast as baby.
Maybe.
I could see that. I can get behind that.
I could, certainly.
Plastic surgery is just another form of body modification, and I'm all for it.
If you
can afford it.
Just in the terms of an actress or actor or, you know, anyone who just works in a field where their appearance is
their livelihood?
part of their livelihood. It's,
and just constantly scrutinized and under a magnifying glass?
Mm-hmm. But then they decide to change. It just makes you wonder, okay, was that a conscious decision of, I just want to get out of this, or...
Or was it an unconscious thing where it was like, you know, just can't take it anymore?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just something I had wondered about. If anybody knows, like, more about that.
If you know why Jennifer Grey decided to change her appearance so drastically, please email us. Hit us up on Facebook. I don't care. Just help us out here, please. And it's not, this isn't even like the most, you know, famous track from the soundtrack.
Just cut all this out.
No, I'm keeping every single bit of this. This is gold.
This could be like outtakes. The song, though, Hungry Eyes.
Hungry Eyes, not Hungry Thighs, which which will tie into our later segment, Misheard Lyrics.
Yeah. Oh, man, Eric Carmen.
Eric Carmen's great.
So 80s. Like, you hear it, and it's just, you're transported to the 80s.
He also did that, what was that other song that he did, Turn the Radio Up? Oh, that sweet sound. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound like anything, like, but it was, when you hear it, you sing along to it. Mm-hmm. You know you do, no matter who you are. If you hear that fucking song come on the radio, you're singing along. The parts that you know, anyway. I mean,
mm-hmm. You only know the chorus.
The chorus, right? Yeah.
But they're going to
make me lose control. Baby, baby.
Oh,
but Hungry Eyes.
That was Yeah.
It's a good moment in Dirty Dancing.
Enough about Dirty Dancing.
You don't want to talk about Dirty Dancing anymore?
All right, fine. I have too much to say on that matter.
Too much to say about that.
Redbone, Come and Get Your Love. So tell me why you wanted to include that one.
Let me remember which... Oh, that was because it was from the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. Mm. That's another one that was just like full of old songs, like from the '70s, and yeah. Mm. And I've always loved this song, even before it was on the soundtrack, and before what's that animated series that uses it as their theme song now? F is for Family. Have you seen that?
Oh man. A Netflix show.
Yeah, right? It's hilarious. Bill Burr.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the opening song. Come and get your love, come and get your love, come and get your love now.
Yeah.
It's just it's one of those, like, it's an earworm for sure. It gets stuck in there. It's such a fun, feel-good song, too.
Mm-hmm. It's a good track, but...
By Redbone. I had no idea that was who did that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's one of those names I've heard, but I don't know anything about the group.
Or yeah, couldn't tell you any other Redbone songs. Yeah. But this song itself was...
One of those probably one-hit wonders that it's amazing how often that's happened.
I wonder if they're still making money off of it.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. It's a great song. What's next?
The Exploited. Speaking of that just kind of... flow, you know? Like so many musicians just exploited to the max.
Yeah.
If you ever seen the movie SLC Punk, it's
Matthew Lillard. This is like it was the early 90s.
Yeah.
And it was all about the punk scene and
Salt Lake City.
And Salt Lake City, which is like fucking armpit of America.
It's its own thing because it's pretty isolated.
Yeah.
Especially at that time period.
And you know, the argument was like, who started it? Like, did the punk movement start in the UK with like the Sex Pistols, or, you know, was it more
New York City?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, their argument in the film was like, they might have done it first, but we did it better, faster, and harder. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen some stuff about the Ramones, and there's a lot to be said for their contribution.
Sure.
Because they were making stuff just as early as any of the UK acts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how sometimes things will happen like that simultaneously in different areas.
To me, it seemed like it was more of a case of parallel thinking. A lot of people. Well, and they would travel back and forth, you know, and I think just kind of share ideas.
Yeah.
So it was really a UK, New York kind of hybrid.
Okay. A collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. Fuck the man collaboratively. Mm-hmm.
But then you had also like just local pockets
because punk is all about like
DIY.
Standing up to tyranny, like mm-hmm. An oppression.
Well, and it's just grassroots.
Yeah.
You know, you do your own thing on your own terms.
Yeah.
You're going to make it with whatever resources you have available at the time.
Yeah, and it's about an attitude, mm-hmm. too. Like,
we don't care if you...
We're against.
Like, how we're doing this.
Or, yeah.
It's, to me, the aspect I like about it is not so much necessarily that it's trying to be anti-something.
Mm-hmm.
I think in its kind of origin, it was a lot like rock and roll, where it's just, this is our form of fun, our form of expression.
Yeah.
Our form of...
But it did become political, though, right? I mean, was kind of an important element to the whole genre. Was
no doubt. There were some political implications in what they were talking about, but that wasn't necessarily at the forefront.
Yeah.
I don't think.
It was fun first.
Well.
Fun first, politics later.
The politics just sort of got, I think, confusing at times, where it wasn't necessarily, I don't know. That just didn't seem to be the focal point.
Yeah.
Sometimes you could, you know, they'd poke fun at something or, but they weren't necessarily saying this is how it should be. Or
right. But that's not how it should be.
Yeah.
I know that much. Like, we don't have the answers, but fuck you.
Like, take a look at yourself before. I think that to me is kind of at the heart of the punk ethos is like, hey, wait a minute. Don't judge me.
Lest ye be judged.
Essentially, yeah. Look at your own bullshit first.
Right.
Before pointing the finger outward.
Yeah. So we haven't even mentioned the song yet.
Sex and Violence.
Sex and Violence. Which is like a 3-fucking-word song.
Yeah. Those are the only lyrics the in only the lyrics song.
Throughout sex for 5 minutes.
5 minute song.
Yeah.
Just say sex and violence.
Which over I and think over. Is a statement in itself.
Yeah. But it's so interesting how they decided we're going to open the film with this song
mm-hmm.
that just repeats it until it's just battered into your head.
Yeah. But it's the same words over and over, but they sing it differently mm-hmm. as the music progresses,
right.
as it gets faster and faster. And that was
different cadence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
It's a gang vocal kind of thing mm-hmm. where sometimes it's in unison. Sometimes they're
a little bit off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes they're just screaming randomly in the back. Stuck in violence!
It's just kind of a fun. Yeah. Not too rehearsed. That's one of the things I like. I enjoy a genre where people get to really, you know, play around
mm-hmm.
and just kind of have
experiment
fun
and
it doesn't have to be too by the numbers.
Yeah.
So
more Bob Ross. We don't make mistakes. We make happy accidents.
Yeah.
So let's go from sex and violence to You Are My Sunshine. That's a left turn.
Perfect segue. This song is now public domain.
Is it?
Yeah.
Nice. This was, not to get too personal, but this was like the song that my mom would sing to me to try and sing me to sleep. Like maybe the one or two times she ever did that in my life. She was a terrible alcoholic, but it's such a sweet nostalgic memory for me. Mm-hmm. And this track, Norman Blake's version,
Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah. From Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Which is also just a really great soundtrack and a really great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Another classic hero journey. It was based on the Odyssey. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But set in, you know, the South in 20s, I want to say, or is it even earlier than that?
I'm not sure exactly the time period of the movie, but it's, let's just suffice it to say old timey.
It's been too long since I've seen it. I that probably was way off the mark. I need to know now.
All I know is I don't want FOP on the Dapper Dan Man.
In the 30s, so I was pretty close.
Yeah. What's 10 years?
Nothing.
Nothing. Drop in the bucket.
And then you picked a Black Sabbath tune, Sweet Leaf, and what? That was from Almost Famous, right?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't think it's actually on the soundtrack, like the official soundtrack for Almost Famous, but it was in the film.
Okay.
Yeah, it was definitely in the movie, and that's one of my favorite Black Sabbath songs.
Mm.
It's very clearly about smoking weed. I mean, the opening is like
just coughing.
Somebody coughing after taking a rip. Just down, 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 down.
Yeah.
It's such like, it's like that's the origin of stoner rock right there is Black Sabbath's Sweet Leaf. I think
that's interesting.
Yeah. And that's a genre that I love.
Yeah. It's very groovy. And I feel like people might take, umbrance with this or something, but when I listen to early Black Sabbath, I'm reminded of jazz.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's like definitely influenced by jazz. Yeah. And other influences as well. I mean, they were, I think
blues definitely.
Obviously blues.
Yeah.
Yeah. The funny thing about a lot of Black Sabbath's earlier music was, and you can tell by listening back to it now and like reading the lyrics, they were actually like not as evil as everyone made them out to be.
No.
You know, a lot of their songs were like warning against the dangers of drugs and alcohol and things like that.
They actually had a very kind of moral message.
Yeah, they were one of the more moral bands that that came out of that time. And they just got a bad rap but for being...
they were edgy. Well, they and I think they wanted to be edgy.
Of course.
They wanted to have that presentation.
Right. Ozzy was a wild man.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't... I think they wanted to subvert people's expectations.
Sure.
It's like, are you really paying attention?
Yeah.
Or are you just turned off by these surface kind of, you know, just your first impression, you know?
Even the song Black Sabbath itself is not necessarily about, like, it's not, like, glorifying evil or the devil or, like, it's a warning,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's like, don't fuck up, because hell's real bad.
Devil's real mean.
War pigs is...
The dangers of war and politics and...
Politics and war, yeah. And just
remember another favorite Black Sabbath song of mine is "Fairies Wear Boots,"
mm-hmm.
and that's basically like them poking fun at neo-Nazis.
Mm.
I think they were like walking home from a bar one night and got like into a little small altercation with some neo-Nazis, and then wrote "Fairies Wear Boots" as like a big fuck you to neo-Nazis, and I appreciate that because fuck Nazis in any form.
Absolutely.
Neo, old Nazis, whatever.
Nazi punks, fuck off.
Nazi punks,
fuck off.
And that's all I got to say about that.
That's all I got to say about that.
We got two more tracks. Running on Empty, Jackson Brown.
Jackson Brown. Name that film? Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump.
I was a running. Another great soundtrack to a great movie. A lot of like period songs.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, yeah, because it really goes through. It
spans an entire fucking.
Several different decades.
Yeah.
It kind of brought to mind another great. What some people consider one of the greatest soundtracks of all time, American Graffiti.
Oh, yeah.
And the film, it's interesting how it was made, I think, in the early 70s, and it's about the early 60s.
Yeah.
So it's like literally only 10 years apart from the time period that it's...
The reality of the movie. Yeah.
But
10 years removed.
Yeah. But it seems like it could have been half a century apart or something.
Yeah.
Because that was such a huge cultural shift. And from the 60s to the 70s was a massive leap, I think.
Yeah.
In cultural
fucking evolution. Disco. Fucking ABBA.
Disco. Not the music, not music wise. I mean, politically.
Or, oh, you know, okay.
Just in how people related to one another and what was acceptable social norms and everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Family values, everything kind of really shifted a lot.
Yeah.
And
I think it was because of the war.
That had to have been a huge part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of the civil rights,
mm-hmm.
All of the protests, just people, I think, getting sick of being lied to.
Yeah.
You know, when it was actually uncovered that the government knew the war was pointless, essentially,
right.
and just covered it up,
mm-hmm.
That they were never going to make any progress and continue to send people anyway.
Yeah. It was very jading, I'm sure, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, in that, I think that's probably the key thing, like the Washington Post expose, I think was one of the turning points to make middle America also just clue into the fact that, oh, okay, these hippies haven't just been...
They're not just fucked up on weed.
No, they're not just...
They have a point.
Extreme. They're not, like, really that far out of the field. They're making some solid points here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Maybe all people are equal. What the fuck, man?
Yeah. What a thought. Yeah, American Graffiti is an interesting turning point. And that soundtrack, I think, is similar to the Forrest Gump soundtrack in that it spans several different decades. And it's kind of a time capsule of where the country had been for the few decades prior to that. And how it changed kind of so quickly.
Yeah.
Even though it's a progression, you know.
Right.
Or everything is always...
Or an evolution.
Constantly evolving.
Yeah.
And then we just decided to throw in a happy Temptations, you know, feel good kind of...
This is off one of my favorite soundtracks ever because it's just like... You can listen to this anytime, and it just brings you up. Even though the movie's kind of about a depressing thing. It's the big chill, right? So all these friends get back together after one of their friends dies. And fun movie fact, the corpse that they're dressing, so, like, you know, they put the clothes on after the makeup and everything. The corpse in the coffin that they're dressing is actually Kevin Costner.
Wow.
Thank you. And that was his, I believe, that was his very first role in a movie, was playing the dead guy in The Big Chill.
No way.
Yeah. Huh.
The more you know.
But, yeah, just a super heavy Motown soundtrack. And The Temptations, this track that Ain't Too Proud to Beg. It's just fantastic.
I mean, you can't go wrong.
You cannot fuck up with The Temptations.
Oh, man, I Ain't Too Proud to Beg is just, that's legendary status.
Yeah. I will do anything if I have to beg and plead for your sympathy. I don't mind, because you mean that much to me.
I'm trying to think if anybody else did that.
You covered the song?
I think... So, the Temptations.
Nobody did it as well as the Temptations, I'll tell you that right now. From the very get-go, from the very beginning of that song, that drum fill. It's just perfect. It gets you going. Makes you want to dance around in the kitchen.
Yeah, their version is the original.
Is it?
I wasn't sure if they were the first to record it, but yeah. The Big Chill soundtrack. And that movie came out in 83, so...
And that was the year we were born. Look at that.
There it is.
Coincidence?
I think not.
Maybe.
It says Costner was cast as Alex, but all scenes showing his face were cut.
Yeah, they don't show his face at all.
Oh, man. The more you know.
Yep. All right, I'm going to have to pause real quick because I piss again.
Right on.
Stupid bladder.
Right pee back. Break. Pee break.
Going to take a pee break.
OGM Podcast.
Welcome back. You know what that sound means? I think it's time for a random segment.
Random.
I feel like we should talk about something random.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that it's not really random. And we talked about talking about this.
We talked about talking about it. Are we going to talk
about it? Funnily enough, as we were walking around today, around Indianapolis, we walked into this, like, handmade crafts store, whatever, knickknacks and shit, and there were coasters with misheard lyrics on them.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was a great idea.
It was a sign.
Yeah, it was like just these cork coasters that had little misheard lyrics on them. And I want to talk about my favorite misheard lyric recently is, first of all, some of the classics are, you know, you got Purple Haze, the fucking Excuse Me While I Kiss This Guy.
Yeah.
Nobody can understand Jimi Hendrix. What were some of the other ones? What are some of the ones that stick out in your head?
Well, of course, Blinded by the Light.
Yeah, yeah. Wrapped Up Like a Douche.
Yeah, and even when you find out what the actual lyrics are, it's still kind of like, I don't know what that means. But
yeah, it was like a drug reference.
Wrapped
right?
Up Like a Deuce.
Yeah, like a $20 bill.
I thought it was a reference to gambling.
Oh, I thought it was a reference another to like rolling up a $20 bill to snort cocaine. That's the story I heard, man.
Wow, yeah.
Man, that was not my time. I didn't write the song.
I'd buy it. I don't know.
I'd buy that for $20.
I got 20 on it.
I'll put 20 down, but only to snort it with.
Mm-hmm.
I want it back. Yeah. I want that 20 back.
We can both share it, but I'll need it back.
Because fuck hygiene. This is drugs.
Right. Who needs it?
And that was, who did that song? Is that Manfred Mann?
Manfred Mann, I believe, yeah.
Blinded by the Light.
So many. You've got, instead of whiter, shade of pale, I've heard.
Turn to Wyatt Earp. Shake a pale.
Turn to Wyatt Earp. Shake a pale.
Which makes no sense.
What does that mean?
I remember back when Alanis Morissette was on the radio constantly, it seemed like every third song was an Alanis song.
Yeah. I mean, that was a good album. Jagged Little Pill was a good album.
Yeah.
People played the shit out of it.
And whatever her follow-up to that was, I don't know. I'm not the foremost expert on it.
We'll fix it in post.
Okay.
What were you going to bring up?
I don't.
You ought to know?
Nah. What's the song where it's, I recommend.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or. No, that's the one where it's like, thank you, India. Thank you, terror. Right? Thank you.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But isn't that part of that song?
No, that's a different song.
Fuck. I'm sorry, Lance.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute. Even though she's still around. She's in that that show, The Great North. The young daughter like hallucinates her image in the sky and the stars and talks to her best friend Alanis Morissette. It's real cute.
Well, and she was God in
Dogma.
Dogma, yeah. Thank you. The song You Learn. You live, you learn.
Oh, yeah.
You learn.
That one, that was off the first album, right? Or
We're about to find out.
You're going to learn today.
Yeah, Jagged Little Pill.
Yeah. What's the lyric that you misheard?
Where she says, I recommend biting off more than you can chew.
Oh.
It
was just question marks for you?
Yeah, I didn't know.
Biting off what?
What is she saying?
The fuck is she biting off?
Modern you could chew?
Modern you could chew.
Modern you didn't. You, I don't know. And somebody explained it to me, and I felt like such an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, she had another famous misheard lyric. It was the cross-eyed bear.
Yeah.
Right? From You Ought to Know.
The cross-eyed bear.
The cross-eyed bear that you gave to me.
Which is a weird way to use that phrase, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's just trying to like fit a rhyme, scheme or whatever. Mm. The cross-eyed bear became very popular. And I feel like, I don't know why they didn't actually like capitalize on that and just like sell these cross-eyed teddy bears.
Yeah, they could have done it
with a little Alanis Morissette t-shirt on it or something.
Yeah. Like, sort of a bastardization of the Grateful Dead bear. But
yeah.
Teddy bears.
Cross-eyed bears. Yeah, I'd buy that.
For a dollar.
I'd still buy that today.
Somebody do it.
Yep.
There's your idea.
Somebody do it. So I recently heard a song and misheard the lyrics, but I think mine's way funnier. It's the Silk Sonic, which is Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars together as a supergroup.
Together at last.
Together at last, making, and it, the title of their project is just perfect because like what you would imagine Silk Sonic would sound like is what they sound like.
It's smooth.
It's very smooth. Yeah, and the song's called "Leave the Door Open." And the whole song is kind of like, basically, I'm gonna be alone tonight. I think you should come over. Kind of song.
Classic setup.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so he's like telling her all these reasons to come over. Like, yeah. Just I got
get my, over here.
My tub warm. Yeah, and so he's like, and if you smoke, what you smoke? I got the haze. And if you're hungry, girl, I got fillets.
Yeah.
Fillets, like F-I-L-E-T-S, like steak. Yeah,
yeah, like, but really good.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I heard was, if you're hungry, girl, I got the Lays. As in, like, a fucking bag of potato chips. Like, the best potato chips ever. Like, and if you're hungry, girl, I got the Lays. Like, come on over, get my hot tub, we'll drink some wine, smoke some really good weed,
hey,
and eat these Lay's chips.
But for real, if you dig this, so
dig this. I'm digging it.
Honestly, a truly phenomenal. I feel like I'm overselling it now.
All right, take a step back.
Yeah,
a truly
let's adjust.
Great.
Yeah, a very good, solid. Match or what do you a combination a pairing is that that's the term I'm looking for. Potato chips and champagne.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They go well together.
Yes.
It's like recommended by like 4-star chefs, and
it's been recommended by
Snoop Dogg.
And what, yeah, who else's recommendation do you need?
I don't know, man. He went from crook to cook.
Right? He's the CEO, so.
Oh, Snoop.
But no, in all seriousness, potato chips, champagne. And
champagne.
That's legit.
Try that shit.
Try it.
Also with some purple haze.
Yeah, and report back to us.
Yeah. Let us know what you think. Email us at omniumgatheringmusica@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And tell us what kind of potato chips and what kind of champagne go best together.
Exactly. Because
if you're hungry, girl, I got the Lays.
Try all the different
I'm going to leave the door open.
What do you want to know?
Tell me that you're coming through.
I thought of a misheard lyric. So, you know the rainbow song, Rainbow in the Dark.
Oh, the Dio song.
It's Dio.
It was before or after Rainbow.
After he was in the band Rainbow and he was in his solo career.
Yeah.
He did a song called Rainbow in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, if you've seen the title before, then you obviously know what he's saying.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense, but
sure.
Most of his lyrics didn't.
Rainbows don't exist in the dark. It's not a thing.
But I had that song on, and Sarah walked in, and she was like, is he saying Rainbow Minotaur?
Like a Rainbow Minotaur. That is so like, Pride Month.
I love that.
Yes, that should be the new the new logo for Dio.
Yeah.
It's a Rainbow Minotaur. That's awesome. Way to go, Sarah.
No sign of the morning coming.
No sign of the morning
coming. Even though it's already 4:20 almost. two minutes. two
minutes. Back to the matter at hand. What is the matter at hand? What are we talking about? The fuck are we talking about? We've been talking for a long time.
What the fuck's the internet?
The soundtrack throwback episode.
Soundtrack throwback. We hope you've found out about something that you maybe didn't know before.
Or just remembered shit you forgot.
Yeah. Or a random factoid.
That's fun,
like
too.
Like Kevin Costner's face being cut out of the film. The Big Chill.
That being Kevin Costner's premier role in cinema.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know it.
I do want to pose a challenge to our listeners.
Challenge.
Yes. Challenge time.
Physical challenge.
Physical. No, this is a mental challenge for mental. Sure. So if you were to, if your life was a movie and you had to curate the soundtrack to it in 15 songs or less, what would it be?
Curate your life movie.
The movie of your biopic.
Yeah.
So to speak. Mm-hmm. If you were the musical director to the movie of your life and you had to curate the soundtrack, you had to pick 15 songs to represent your life from beginning to now, what would they be? And I really hope that you would share that with us. Just go to our Facebook page, OGM Podcast. Or you can email us also at omniumgatheringmusica@gmail.com. Or you can call us. Matt's phone number is... call anytime. No, but...
4:45 in the morning.
Yeah, whatever.
As we record this.
But hashtag it. Like, just post it on Facebook and hashtag it. Hashtag OGM soundtrack. That's good enough, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just off the top of my head. I can't think of a better... I don't want it to be too fucking long.
Right.
And, like, unreadable.
Or just tag a OGM podcast.
Yeah, I guess you could just tag us as well. I don't know how all this shit works.
Technology.
You kids are smart. You'll figure it out. Just make a soundtrack for your life and let us know what it is. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we'll pick one that we like the best. And we'll mention you and your soundtrack in our next episode. Maybe. If we remember.
It's random.
It is just random. And really, we're in charge.
We own this.
Yeah. So, do what we want.
Collaborative, but we have the final say.
Yeah, right. Make no promises. But please, to participate in our show, we want to hear from you.
Audience participation.
Otherwise, it's just me and Matt, and that's kind of boring sometimes. So let us know what you think. If you enjoy the show, if you hate it, if you want to call us names, whatever. Mm. Just talk to us, please. We're so lonely. So help us out. Talk to us. Let us know what you think.
Talk at us.
Talk at us.
Talk about us.
Talk. Yeah, definitely talk about us. We'll give them something to talk about.
Something to figure out.
How about love?
Love.
Love. All right, that's enough singing for me. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm one of your hosts, Gerald.
And I'm Matt.
And this has been the OGM Podcast Soundtrack Throwback Episode. See you next time.
Peace.